Hello everyone, welcome to Our Most Beautiful Light. My name is Matthew Galloway, and in this episode, I take a trip with my soon-to-be 90-year-old mother to her hometown of North Billerica, a small town about 25 miles north of Boston. I think that's all you need to know. If you have questions or comments, I can be reached on the internet. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show. I'm not sure when my mother first mentioned that she'd like to go back to Billerica, but she had suggested it again a few months ago as the country eased out of lockdown. At this moment, she and I, along with my older sister, were stopped at a very windy state park just off the Massachusetts Turnpike. I asked her why she wanted to go back. I had heard stories about Billerica my entire life, but I had never been. Was it a mill town where my grandparents struggled to raise a family on a shoestring, or was it more bucolic, a place where my mother and her sisters spent their young lives swimming and ice skating, playing in the woods? I wanted to understand Billerica through my mother's eyes, what she loved about it, and what had made her leave. Now that we are less than an hour away, I asked if there were specific people and places she was thinking about. I never met my grandfather, but my mother always said that he was stern and silent. Hearing her mention him now made me suspect that for her, this trip might be more than just nostalgia. I wondered if anything about going back made her nervous. Soon we are driving through North Billerica. There are winding roads with lots of traffic, residential sections interspersed with commercial, auto repair, gas stations, convenience stores, that sort of thing. As we stopped in the parking lot of a Panera Bread to get our bearings, I worried that my mother's memories were buried under suburban sprawl. Undeterred, she soon guided us to a house on Treble Cove Road where she had lived as a teenager. The house was a big two-story Victorian with a wraparound porch, but my mother's family had lived in a small apartment on one side. We got out of the car and walked through the neighboring yard to get a better view. "That's where I used to smoke cigarettes," my mother said, pointing to a second-story window and describing how a leak in the bathroom used to cascade down into the kitchen. I thought I was recording our conversation, but despite my test run on the turnpike, I failed to do something on the app I had downloaded. My mother pointed out nearby houses where friends and babysitters had lived and then guided us to the site of the variety store she had mentioned earlier, which after going inside we learned was now owned by her old friend Glennie Wilson's son. Now in his 60s, John McBride remembered my mother, at least by name, and showed her a bulletin board of family photos. His mother and father were now gone, but he told us about one of his clients, Danny O'Brien, who still lived around the corner and had been part of the old gang. Danny soon arrived, and he and my mother traded news about friends, almost all of whom were dead. When Danny mentioned the Barton sisters, he seemed more like a kid and my mother a little out of reach, in the way teenage girls often do to boys their own age. Or maybe, I thought, it was because my mother and her sisters had left Billerica and Danny had stayed. The next morning, we drove through Billerica Center, which unlike North Billerica had a town square, shops, a library, and a town hall. I asked my mother if anything she had seen so far had surprised her. Whether the landscape had changed or not, it still sparked many memories for my mother. I told my mother that my impression of Billerica, before I had seen it, was that it had been more of a mill town. I almost expected to see big, hulking factories, like the ones I associated with my hometown of Pittsburgh. A few minutes later, we met up with my mother's youngest sister, Linda, who had driven in from the Cape. There were originally five Barton children. Their other surviving sister, Nancy, who's a few years younger than my mother, had come down with a cold and unfortunately couldn't make it. Their oldest sister, Janet, died many years ago, as did a younger brother, Colin. Our plan was to drive to a house where the sisters had lived on Billerica Avenue, and then to the house in Garden City where my mother was born. On the way to Billerica Avenue, we tried to find something my mother and Linda called the canal. The canal was now largely inaccessible due to its bifurcation by a heavily trafficked road, a chain-link fence, and an ominous-looking government facility and parking lot. But my sister spotted a small triangular park on the other side of a bridge. We crossed on foot, careful to stay on the shoulder of the road as cars and trucks roared by. From a commemorative sign, we learned that the Middlesex Canal, which was built in the early 1800s, did not come from Lake Erie, but from the Merrimack River, just a few miles away in Lowell. The canal originally went to Boston, but became obsolete with the rise of the railroads. As we followed the path into the woods, we laughed about Lake Erie, but I thought about being a kid, and how we often want to believe that we're connected to a bigger, more famous world than the pedestrian one we see every day. After the canal, we drove to Billerica Avenue, as my mother and Aunt Linda pointed out the houses of people they had once known. An older woman, who happened to be getting her mail, crossed the street to say hello. Barbara Egan had been living on Billerica Avenue since 1947 and had graduated from Billerica High 3 years before Linda. They knew a lot of people in common. After saying goodbye to Barbara, we walked up the hill, following a narrow road that curved around behind the back of the house. We said goodbye to the house on Billerica Avenue and drove north to McClone Woods, which my mother described as a party spot when she was a teenager. The barely paved road crossed over the railroad tracks and we found ourselves in a junkyard filled with stacks of dead cars. It looked like a set from The Walking Dead. It was a good reminder that the woods could be terrifying, as my mother talked about after we turned around and drove to the Billerica North train station, where we arrived just as a Boston-bound train was pulling in.
There was a lumber yard there. I used to be afraid. Janet and I, we walked every place. Nobody ever took us anywhere.
No, and we'd have to get our own ride.
If we needed a ride, and we'd have to come home at night, cut through the lumber yard. We were so frightened, and we'd run like crazy across the tracks.
As we walked back to the car, Linda spotted a house where their Aunt Agnes had once lived. We next drove past Billerica's two textile mills, Talbot and Faulkner, which were built in the 1800s over the Concord River. Unlike what I had pictured, they were beautiful brick buildings, rustic and charming, and my mother remembered going with her mother to get scraps of fabric to make braided rugs. But she also remembered walking to school past the mill workers who leaned out the windows to yell and whistle at the girls, and she remembered watching the color discharge from the mills float down the river behind their house. We had now arrived in a neighborhood called Garden City. According to an article I found in the Lowell Sun, Garden City was built in 1912 in conjunction with the arrival of the B&M Railroad Shop, the same shop where my grandfather was hired a few decades later at the end of the Depression. Rather than house the new workers in crowded tenement buildings, which were associated with infant mortality, disease, poverty, and homelessness, the town appropriated 56 acres to build small 1,400-square-foot houses on narrow streets that predated the automobile and were safe for children to play on. Even more intriguing, to me anyway, the workers were given the option of buying shares in a nonprofit cooperative arrangement. It seemed like the modern world could learn something from Garden City. We stopped at the Faulkner Kindergarten, which my mother and aunt had each attended. After taking a few pictures, we went in search of the house on Mason Avenue, where my mother was born. The next morning, before we drove back to New York City, we ate breakfast and talked about all that we had seen over the past few days. I asked my mother if Garden City was the way she remembered it.
It was pretty much the same, but it wasn't what I remembered it to be. I don't think it was too attractive. There were some good old houses, and it seemed like it was a little bit bland. What I remember is how I loved the woods. And we were surrounded by woods at that time. We had a babysitter once who took us in the woods and showed us how to pick a wildflower and put it in a glass jar and bury it so that you could look in the dirt down into the glass to see the flower. And there were lady slippers. I'd never seen them anywhere else since then. As I think back, it was the outside playing that was the best.
As for me, I had a much better understanding of the geography of Billerica, and it wasn't hard to imagine my mother and her sisters swimming, ice skating, going to school, smoking in the woods, flirting. But there was something in my mother's tone that made me imagine another version of Billerica, one more personal to her that was also informed by her relationship with her parents and her hopes and fears about the person she wanted to become. I wondered if my mother ever thought about what her life might be like if she hadn't left.
You know, I had that conversation with Nancy recently because her boyfriend, Freddie Lavin, died. And she said she was so glad she didn't marry him because when he went in the service, he intended to come home and marry her. And I said, well, you know, Nancy, it may not have been too bad to be married to... Freddie Lavin came from a large family, and they were very close-knit. I didn't know them. It just didn't seem like it would have been too bad to grow up, especially if we lived in Billerica Center. I actually said that to her. There was a whole different philosophy in Billerica Center than there was in North Billerica. We were the mill people, and they just worked hard and brought the pay home and didn't make much conversation.
I asked my mother to explain what she meant by philosophy, and she described having a friend from Billerica Center, also named Nancy, like my mother's younger sister, whose father was a doctor.
I used to stay overnight at her house now and again, and her mother would always say to me, and now, because her name was Nancy, my friend, Nancy was all set up for college. And her mother would say to me, now what are you going to do? And I didn't know what I was going to do. So it seemed like I knew about nursing. I knew in my heart I wanted to go to college, but there was, I didn't know how. I had no idea. And so I said, oh, I'm going to be a nurse. I knew I could do that. I knew a couple of girls who went there. So I told my mother. She was all behind me, and they somehow got the $150 together.
I have no memories of my grandmother, who died when I was just a year old, but I knew that she had grown up in a relatively wealthy family on Prince Edward Island.
She didn't talk a lot about when her father died and they had to come to Massachusetts. They had to move, or why they moved. Yeah, the father died and they had to get rid of the shoe store. And the boys in that family went to college. No, she must have had some kind of secretarial training.
Now that I knew my grandmother had been denied the same opportunity to go to college, my mother's decision to attend nursing school made more sense. I asked my mother if she thought her mother had been happy in Billerica.
I think my mother made the best of everything that was handed to her. I know that she came from a family that was better off than our family. And she talked, and especially to me, she talked through the years a lot about her family to the point where I used to feel jealous that I didn't have that kind of thing she had. Growing up in Prince Edward Island and going to Rocky Point for the summer and, swimming and going on boats and, I don't know, it seemed like they had a really nice family. In a nice, nice house with the porch going all around it. And, she was kind of short-tempered sometimes. She would yell at us, but she laughed a lot. We used to have to wash the windows, and she would get on the inside of the window, and we would get on the outside of the window, and it was like a game, you know, trying to follow each other's rags around the window, and she would laugh. So I have nice memories of my mother.
I pictured a woman trying to be a good mother despite finding herself with very little in the middle of the Great Depression. Like many parents, she probably wanted to push her daughters into a different life without revealing the extent to which she had regrets about her own.
She really wanted something for me, but it was an undercurrent. It wasn't anything that was kind of out in the open. And I can't even put my finger on what it was, but we all knew that it was a good idea to get out of Billerica.
I wondered if my grandfather had similar feelings about wanting to leave, given that he had been born and raised in North Billerica.
I think he had that feeling to get out of the mills like I had the feeling to get out of Billerica. It's strange not to know anything. I don't really know anything about his childhood or his growing up. When I went home for my father's funeral, you know, as I've told you many times, he hardly ever talked. We didn't know him at all. But he was big in the Union, and he was big in the Legion, the American Legion, and the whole town turned out for his funeral. There was tons of people coming and going at the wake. I was so amazed at that.
At home, my mother said, her father was a different person, distant and rigid.
You know, my father could never say my name. You know, everybody in the house called me Tricia. He called me Patricia. You could never say it. Janet and I once, we wanted to go to a dance. Or, I don't know what it was. Our father, he was just so strict about, you know, you couldn't wear lipstick. And anyway, he was asleep in the chair in the living room. And Janet and I were going to go in and ask him. And so we just danced around the living room, just really danced around, pretending what we were going to say to him. I think he woke up, and we went running out of the room. We never said it. We had an old washing machine. It was in the bathroom on the kitchen. My poor mother used to have to pull it out into the kitchen and attach it to the faucets, but the machine broke. And we're sitting at the kitchen table having dinner, and it just so happened that my boyfriend Dickie's father was a washing machine repairman. He was a handyman, and he came to the door, and there was a glass in the door, but the glass was broken, so it was nothing. And he came to the back door, and my father said something so angry at him, and I was so completely embarrassed that he would do that. Because he came at dinner time. We had dinner every single night at 5 o'clock. Around 4:30, my mother would say, "Who's going to put the potatoes on?" It was always boiled potatoes and fried bologna or fried hamburgers.
She struggled to remember him being kind or affectionate.
Nobody ever touched us. Nobody. No, no kissing, no hugging. I thought that was just in the movies. We were living on Billerica Avenue once. He went upstairs, and he came down. And he had a couple of things. He had a ring. I had it for years. I don't know what happened to it. It was made out of a nickel. I'm getting it mixed up. But anyway, he brought that down and I think he gave it to me. Nancy always thought he gave it to her.
Most of the time when my mother and her sisters told stories about their family life in Billerica, there was a sitcom quality to it. A stern father, a beleaguered but good-natured mother, irrepressible girls getting in and out of innocent trouble. Like their mother, my mother and her sisters loved to laugh. But as I listened to my mother now, I felt like she was confronting something more serious about her past. Something that even at the age of 90, she wanted to unveil or perhaps release.
Can I remember once? Oh, my father. What did you say? He must have been drinking or something. We lived in Trouble Cove Road, so I was a teenager. And he went down to the cellar. Every night, you know, you had to get down and put the coal in the furnace. And he just was down there, sitting beside the furnace. And I just couldn't stand it. And I went down and I kept saying to him, go to bed, go to bed, go to bed. And he wouldn't. That he was sitting down there when he should be in bed. He must have been very depressed. I think he must have been depressed his whole life. Wanting more, maybe. Maybe the sense of he married somebody kind of above him a little. And I don't know, that he was perhaps not enough for her, and because the marriage wasn't very good.
She remembered having similar feelings of wanting more from life.
I remember my 16th birthday, how I just ran upstairs and lying on the bed and cried and cried and cried. So, it wasn't all hunky-dory. I wanted more for my 16th birthday. I don't know, didn't even know what it was I wanted, but I was so disappointed. I don't know. So there was a sense at times of wanting more. I remember once, like, I was going to a football game, and I was going to meet my friend Nancy, the one whose father was the doctor, and she just had the nicest clothes. And I didn't know what to wear. I had really nothing to wear. I had to wear my mother's suit coat. It was a gray flannel, like a blazer thing. How awkward I felt. Yes, I wanted to be Nancy Marshall and have my mother getting me ready for college. And so there's that part, you know. Life, all life isn't beautiful.
As I listened to my mother, I could relate to a lot of what she described about her childhood. I had lacked for nothing in a material sense when I was growing up, but I had often felt like two different people. One who was happy and popular, the youngest of five outgoing athletic children, and another who secretly wanted a very different life. It was a desire that, for me, like my mother, had led me to want to escape my hometown, and to some extent, my family. For my mother, I think it would be easy to frame this desire in class terms. She had grown up poor and wanted better things. Nice clothes, good food, a college education. In my case, I wanted to be gay. But what I realized now was that this sense of longing, at least for my mother and I, went deeper than class or sexual orientation. It wasn't exactly depression, or at least not in a clinical sense, but a kind of melancholy tied to the certainty that happiness, like life itself, is always fleeting. To find this common ground with my mother felt liberating. As a gay man without children, I had struggled to position myself in the family tree, but here was evidence of a different kind of lineage, one that acknowledged the full spectrum of life. For my mother, it seemed like this trip to Billerica had brought up lots of memories, many happy, some painful, which had finally allowed her to say goodbye.
It's when we moved to Trouble Cove Road and we were teenagers that we really had this gang of kids. Nancy had her gang, and Janet and I had ours, and we were known, we were three girls, and we were all pretty good looking, I guess, and the boys kind of liked us, but that was when we had our fun. We did have so much fun.
This episode of Our Most Beautiful Light was recorded and edited by me, Matthew Galloway, in August and September of 2021. Special thanks to my sister for being a fearless driver and to my mother for answering all my questions